Reading with your kids.
Hola, ni hao, konnichiwa, assalamu alaikum, shalom, mahaba, cha, bonjour, namaste, jumbo. Bienvenidos, welcome, welcome, welcome. My name is Jed Lee, and this is Reading with Your Kids. We're beaming out to you from Reedville, the loveliest neighborhood in all of Boston. We are so thrilled that you are here. At Reading with Your Kids, our mission is simple but powerful: to bring families together through the shared magic of books and stories. Every episode, we sit down with fascinating folks who are creating books that open hearts and spark imaginations. Do you want to help us grow this mission? Then please tell all of your friends, your family, your kids' teachers, even the crossing guards, and remind them that they can hear us on the WREB AM/FM 24/7 radio network, and they can find us on the iHeartRadio app, on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Audible. Everywhere you find podcasts, you can find Reading with Your Kids. Buckle up. We've got some super special guests coming to you today. First up, Cynthia Muchnick. She's here to celebrate her new picture book. It's called C is for Construction. Later in the show, S.J. Engelman returns to Reading with Your Kids to celebrate her brand new book. It's called Max Mission Diary, Operation Save the Summer. Before you invite our guests into the studio, I want to tell you about a fantastic podcast that is part of our Reading with Your Kids podcast family. It's called Guardians of the Game, and you and your kids are going to love it. In the darkest of dungeons, with danger around every corner, there's no second take. Every role matters. The Guardians of the Games brings you gripping, edge-of-your-seat fantasy storytelling where heroes are forged, villains plot, and the fate is decided by the toss of a die. Will courage triumph or chaos reign? Find out in Guardians of the Game, your weekly ticket to adventure, intrigue, and heart-pounding moments you'll never forget. Guardians of the Game is a family-friendly Dungeons and Dragons-inspired podcast that you and your kids are just going to love. You can find Guardians of the Game on the iHeartRadio app, on Spotify, Amazon Music, Good Pods, Apple Podcasts, wherever you find your favorite shows. You can find Guardians of the Game. My friends, you are in for a treat. My guests and I have just been yapping for about a half an hour before we hit record, and we had a great time, and we're going to have a great time here. Our guest is celebrating her brand new picture book. It's called C is for Construction. Please welcome to the show, Cynthia Muchnick. Cynthia, how are you?
I'm good. We're already old friends. I mean, you know how that goes. It's great to meet you.
It's great to meet you too. Tell us about C is for Construction, and then I know our conversation is going to go all over the place.
I have a feeling we could hang out, you know, all evening, but at this point, let's focus on what we're here for. So C is for Construction is a brand new, adorable, if I do say so myself, alphabet book for, really any construction site truck loving enthusiast. It's, or anyone in the business of construction or who's just excited by trucks and sounds and things that happen on construction sites. And the book is, actually just a like 8x8 cardboard, thick cardboard with gorgeous illustrations by my illustrator, Volha Kaliha, who I actually haven't gotten to meet in person, but she's such a talented illustrator. And it's published by Familius, my wonderful publisher that brings, you know, families together and brings books and, you know, information to have families enjoy one another through reading. And this is part of a series that they do called an ABC primer series. So this one is C is for Construction, but they have S is for Snow, O is for Ocean, you know, F is for Farm, N is for New York. So they have these different ones, and I'm just the construction piece of the series.
Well, that's great. You know, we love that books can be mirrors, windows, and sliding glass doors. And, you know, when I first started the podcast and first started hearing that phrase, it was like, okay, yeah, it makes sense for a kid who might be Asian to see himself or herself on the pages of a book. But then I realized I was having a conversation with the boss clown of Clowns Without Borders, a group that I belong to. And we were talking, and she was telling me about a book that her kid loves, which is about a clown. And I thought back to when my kids were young and one of their favorite books was a Tommy DePaola book called Clown of God. And my kids love that. And I realized, oh, they're seeing themselves. They're seeing their dad. They're seeing themselves part of this clown family. And I'm imagining that, you know, lots of kids love trucks, but there's lots of kids out there whose dad or mom works in construction. So this, what a great way to see yourself represented in a book.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's really funny. The book was inspired by my now 27-year-old son, who at the age of 2, 3, 4, 5 could not stop talking, looking, babbling, pointing to, pulling like a magnet to any construction site, any construction truck. I was absolutely certain he was going to go into this profession because he had checked out every single book from our public library that had to do with trucks and things that go and things that move. And he just was fascinated by even the minutia of trucks, the difference between an articulated dump truck and an actual dump truck and a steamroller versus a cement mixer versus all these sort of different kinds of excavators, a toothy excavator or a crane excavator. And he was really my teacher on this. And by age 3, that was our first birthday party for him. At age 3 was a construction theme. We had a little bobcat that the kids could sit on and climb on and play around on. And every kid had a little plastic hard hat and a construction truck birthday cake. And all the kids went home with their own little truck. And I mean, it was just, it sort of was consuming our world. And back in those days, I said to him, you know, maybe we could write a book together when he was, you know, 5 or 6 about trucks. And so we created what was really a very early version of CS for Construction. It had more rhymes and it had more sentences and vocabulary. And I shopped that book around, I want to tell you, Jed, year after year after year, and nobody wanted it. And so I started writing different books. And actually now CS for Construction is now my 11th book. So it's not like I didn't have any other books published, but I dusted this one off because Familius, my publisher, who I started working with in 2020, had this whole children's division. And the book I'd written for them in 2020 was a parenting book that was, you know, nonfiction, research-based parenting book. So I just dusted it, took it out of the drawer, and I said, hey, you know, you do children's books. Does anything like this interest you? And we had such a positive working relationship and rapport that the, you know, the publisher, Christopher Robbins, said, you know what, I think we can make that work in our primer ABC series. And I said, are you kidding me? Like, do you realize how long I have waited to hear a yes on this book? So this is sort of a modified version of that book. And it's been a dream. I mean, it came out, you know, just, I don't know, 6 or 8 weeks ago. I am having a ball just, you know, sharing it, promoting it, hanging out with little tiny kids, and they are eating it up. I mean, some are actually chewing on it because it's cardboard and those are the babies. And then the ones with a few words are kind of babbling. And then the 4 and 5 year olds are starting to really pronounce and read the book. So it really works for an age range.
Yeah. Well, you know, we love our friends at Familius. They were really a big part of reading with your kids kind of taking off. We've had Christopher Robin on. One of the things that when he told me that it can take 3 or 4 years from the time they buy a manuscript,
yeah,
and the time the book hits the shelves, I am like, dude, you got to be kidding me. 3 or 4 years.
And, yeah. And this book was pushed back actually 2 years. So this has been like 4 years ago we signed the contract.
Uh-huh.
So I have been just waiting on bated breath for this to come out. I mean, I am out of the gates running fast, you know, on my cement mixer, you know, getting through. And I have to tell you something, just around the corner from where I live, just a few houses down is a construction site. And I have now brought that book over there and I have met every worker on the site. They have been taking pictures holding the book. They're, you know, holding up their tool next to the picture of the tool, and I'm putting them all over my social media, and then they're wanting copies for their kids and their families and their grandkids. And it's just, it's been such a hoot. It's really, really been fun. So I'm very grateful to Familius and all the books that they publish really do, you know, connect families together. That is sort of the goal of how reading and books can unite people.
That's fantastic. And what a great idea going over there and getting those snaps for social media.
Yeah, free promotion, right? It's been, it's really fun. In fact, I learned an interesting factoid that I've now shared at some of my book events. And I talked to the contractor of the website of the, of the construction site, not the website, got to the contractor. And when I opened up the book, the page, to M. So on my book, the M is for, it could have been a lot of things. The M is for measuring tape.
Oh, okay.
And I don't know if you've seen this series, or I think I sent you a download of the book, but it's really just an illustration and a letter with, you know, each letter representing a different page. But M was for measuring tape. It also could have been for mixer. It also could have been for other M words. So it was very hard to decide how to pick just one. And what he told me was the measuring tape is the most popular and prevalent and important item on the entire construction site, and that every single construction worker carries one. And I thought, I didn't realize that it was that important a tool. I would think a hammer and a nail would also be important. But he said, this by far is the most popular and the most important item on every construction site, more than the trucks even.
Absolutely. Measure twice, cut once.
Exactly. Exactly. So anyway, so it has, it's been a lot of fun. When I've been doing these book events at stores, and I'm hoping to be more in your neck of the woods this fall to try to get myself to Boston. And I have an event coming up in New York, in a couple of weeks in Queens. And I've been doing kind of a little mini book launch out here in California, which is where I'm from. So it's been a lot of fun, but I've been bringing in, these kids, and everyone who arrives gets, a complimentary plastic hard hat and a little construction vest. And a little tiny truck that I warn the parents, be careful because the parts are small, you know, not for chewing on. And we do a little interactive reading together. And then we do a craft project, which is non-messy. And we have a little snack. And it's like a 1 hour fun, you know, babysit your kids, have a good time, read the book, story time. And the kids are just a crack up because the older ones are doing the sound effects and pointing at things and actually reading the words. And the babies are just really literally, like I said, chewing on the books. So, and they're non-toxic. So that's good too, you know.
Yep. Board books are meant to be eaten.
That's right. That's for sure. That's for sure. And the more dinged up, the better, right? Like, don't you remember those early versions we had of like Goodnight Moon and Pat the Bunny and Brown Bear, Brown Bear? The more chewed up, you know, the more loved.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, it's, I think that C is for Construction is a great book to start a conversation with our kids about. Maybe, you know, maybe instead of getting all that pressure to go to college and spending all the money and maybe get into the trades. ChatGPT ain't going to be working any measuring tape anytime soon.
You know what, Judd? That is fascinating, that comment you just made. And let me tell you why. Because if I hearken back to my previous book, which was a parenting book called The Parent Compass, that's another familiar book that's about parenting through the adolescence, through tweens and teen years, and how to kind of navigate those really tricky years. We have an entire chapter of that book dedicated to alternate routes, to kids who can choose things other than college, because this is, and this was even pre-ChatGPT, you know, I mean, I know that, you know, the tech people knew about ChatGPT, but not everyone else did. We knew about like Google searches, but the reality is there are so many other choices and we need trades more than ever. They can make a lot more money. It's good for your health because you're outdoors and you're being physical and you're creating something with a team. So it's obviously, you know, to work with your hands, there is absolutely nothing wrong with that at all. Our world needs definitely more plumbers, more, you know, people, more electricians, more contractors, more, you know, truck drivers, whatever those things are. It's so important. And obviously there's the route, there's going the military route. There's, you know, going right into the job force. There's going to beauty school. There's going to tech school. There's so many going into the military. There's so many different choices that kids have that there doesn't need to be this, you know, burden pressure and the financial pressure. You know, community colleges are a wonderful place to start for so many kids and sometimes finish. Sometimes an AA degree is enough. It's what you need to then go have your foundation and go where you're going next. So I like to think, it's funny when I, saw a picture and I put it on my Instagram. So I have an Instagram that is C is for construction. It's just the title of the book. So you can, all the listeners can follow that. But on the Instagram, I have a picture, a little video of a grandfather reading C is for construction to his 18-month-old granddaughter. And they were so excited because A in the book is for architect. And this, and I want you to notice also, I know your readers might not, your listeners might not see this, but there's a female and a male on the first page because women and men can be in construction and in that field. But this little girl, her daddy is an architect. So she, you know, that's a big word for a little kid. You know, A could be for other things, but A being for architect gives you something to talk about. It gives you a hard word to learn to wrap your mouth around. It gives you letters you can spell. You know, I wanted the book to not just be like A is for apple and B is for boy and C is for car. You know, you want to have some of the words be a little bit more obscure, not totally un, you know, things people don't know about. But I will say X was the trickiest, right? Like how many construction words do we know with X? So we had to fudge that a little, and X had to be for excavator. So, so we did have to kind of play around with that, which everyone was kind of fine with.
Well, you know, you could have done X is for X-ray when you fall off the construction site and break.
And you need to get your bones checked. You could do that. But, right, isn't every other book X is for X-ray, right?
I think so.
let's mix it up a little bit. But anyway, so it's been really fun. I mean, how do I have ideas for so many more of these, but I'm afraid I'll get replaced by ChatGPT. So I am really happy to have, you know, a Familius, you know, let me put my name on something so sweet and endearing. And I know I have future grandkids that will be, you know, coming along the way, that at least I'll have something to kind of read them as they, you know, are born.
You know, you mentioned A is for architect, and you and I were talking about hosting international kids in our home.
Yeah.
And the very first two international kids that we hosted were from Italy, and they came to Boston to study architecture. And it's funny, they came to us because they had made arrangements for an apartment in Boston. They thought they were going to get an apartment in Boston or anywhere in the United States for $200 total for 2 months for $200. And I'm like, you can't get a parking space for that money.
Oh my gosh.
They got here and they were, we don't have any place to live. And they called home and other friends called us. It was neat. They invited us in to their final project. They had worked on a project as a group, and the project was they had to take cardboard and create a chair that could hold the professor's friend who weighed in excess of 400 pounds.
Oh my gosh, it sounds really like mechanical engineering meets architecture. That's amazing. What a cool team project. Did it work? Did the chair hold up?
It did. There was a number of different designs there. We went in, they invited us into the, you know, the final exhibition of it, and the designs were so different and so intriguing. And
I love that. I love that. Well, you know what? They probably could have used the book if their English wasn't so good. They could have used, you know, a little bit of basic vocabulary, I guess, you know, for, it could have been a whole book on A is for architect, and then you could have gone into architecture. Cause one of the pages that your architect people, I guess I'm giving the whole book away, but F is for floor plan. Because that's what the architects have to create to, you know, to figure out, you know, where the rooms and the doors and the, you know, the layout of the space and how it's going to work.
I'm imagining that if you're reading this book with your 5-year-old and your 3-year-old, and when the 3-year-old stops chomping on it, you could, you could do a little project with your 5-year-old where you kind of create a floor plan.
Oh, for sure.
Of your home.
The book has no bounds. You can have, you know, you could find something on every single page to sort of mimic or create or make your own version of it. I mean, that's the thing, is that it, you know, books we know unlock our creativity. They unlock our imagination. And this book really does, I think does that job really well, because it can appeal to sort of this range of ages, and as different stages move on in their lives, the book can take on a little bit of a different, you know, a different meaning and be a little more sophisticated for them. Now, some readers might argue that architect is too difficult a word for an ABC book, but I refuse to believe that.
No, I agree. And one of the things that I discovered here, as a host of Reading With Your Kids, picture books are meant to be read by a parent to a child. And that's why you will find more sophisticated vocabulary in a picture book than you will in a chapter book that a child is.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, Jed, let me tell you a story. So that 27-year-old boy of mine, who's now a man, who is an educator, he works in education, as we talked about offline together. Yep. When he was a baby, he was so enamored with books. And the moment he came home from the hospital, we started reading to him The Little Engine That Could and all those classics. And his little arms and legs, before he could even speak, would move around in the little bouncy chair with excitement when we pulled the books out. And especially like Dr. Seuss books that had a cadence and a rhythm and a rhyme. And as he grew, I don't know if it was because of that early reading or not, but in order for us to get more sleep in the morning, because you know those babies wake up at the crack of dawn, what we used to do when he fell asleep was we would bring a stack of cardboard books after he fell asleep, and we would put them at the foot of his crib, inside the crib. And I don't know, someone might argue that, you know, nowadays, I don't know, back then you put them on their back, you put them on their stomach, you have to take, you swaddle them, you don't swallow them. There's all these different rules about babies. Maybe nowadays you can't put books in the cribs. But back then we put a little stack of 5 or 6 cardboard books after he fell asleep. And in the morning at about 5 or 5:30, when he woke up like the rooster, we would hear him on the baby monitor, and he was and reading to himself from these pages that were like giving him candy. And what it did for us was it bought us 30 minutes to 45 minutes of more sleep, because we would read the book and then he would throw it through the slats of the crib and we'd hear it land on the ground. And then we knew he was on the second one. And this went on, I'm not telling you, this went on for like a year. And fast forward to a family vacation when he was probably 9 or 10. And each kid was given a little suitcase to bring on the airplane, the little wheelie suitcase for our trip. And what that son did was he filled up the suitcase with books.
Awesome.
And we said, sweetie, you need some clothes for the vacation. And he said, but what am I going to read? And this is when, you know, Kindles were coming out and things, and we wanted to buy him one as a treat. And he said, no, I don't want that. I want to turn the pages. I want to know what spot I'm on. So poor thing, he had to relinquish half the suitcase for clothes. And then we found ourselves a few days into the vacation scouring the beach reads that, you know, people had left behind because he was hungry for the books. And so it really does, you know, translate that he has become this teacher and this continued reader and still going to school and still, you know, wanting to absorb books and write books and read books and all of that. But people used to look at us and say, how did you get him to like that so much? Like, how do you get him off the device? And I said, you know what? I think he was really born with the love of it. And I do believe if you start reading to them, whether they understand it or not, they absorb the words and they get excited by words.
Yeah.
So
well, one of the things, speaking of words, one of the things that we've celebrated here on the podcast is if you read to your kid 20 minutes a day, every day, by the time they get to preschool or kindergarten, they will have heard over 800,000 more words than their peers who weren't read to. And that is an advantage that it's not going to go away.
And so, amazing. That's an amazing statistic. We give that statistic for the parents of tweens and teens with family meals. And as challenging as a family meal can be to sit around a table with, you know, your teens, you know, buckled down because they've got homework and activities and need sleep. And they have all sorts of after school things that leave them out of the house till 8 o'clock at night. A family meal, I tell families, can be a meal in the back seat of the car. It can be breakfast on the run. It can be on the weekend making a family meal together. It's not like you have to all sit down the same time every week. It's impossible when you have multiple kids to do that, unless you can make like maybe a Sunday night meal tradition or a Friday night meal tradition. But family meals give you the same kind of statistics about less depression in kids, less suicide rates in kids, better connection with parents, open for conversation, and the argument is, do you allow devices or not allow devices at the table? And I always say, like, leave a basket at the table, but if you need a device to illustrate something, mm-hmm. I do like the idea of being able to use a device for that reason, because it really is a great tool that can, you know, show the photo or show the place you've been, or look something up that's a factoid that you're kind of trying to figure out. But again, that's another debate on technology at the table or not.
Okay. Well, you know, we've talked about CSEAS for construction. We mentioned your parent compass. I just have to ask you, I'm on your website. I see, you know, the great books that you've written, helping kids write great college essays and how to get themselves into college. But the thing that caught my eye is 101 ways to pop the question. What's the most unusual way that you've celebrated in 101 ways to pop the question?
Oh, well, Jed, you're going way, way back in my career. Like, that, those were the books I was writing in my 20s when I was getting engaged myself, but they were inspired by true stories. And so, what I will tell you is, back in the day, long before, long before TiVo and streaming services and this and that, I was the United States national leading engagement expert. I was on all of the morning talk shows, all of the radio shows, all of the magazines to talk about the creative ways that people pop the question. Now, that has been replaced by promposals and gender reveals and really elaborate marriage proposals. But back in the day when I was in my 20s, which was about 30 years ago, these really sweet, endearing, wonderful marriage proposals became like a little bit of a family folktale. They were kind of like your special moment when you decided. And they happened in fortunes and fortune cookies and are spelled out in candles on the beach, the words, "Will you marry me?" But I have to go back to Old Faithful, which is my own, which is really what inspired my accidental career of becoming an author, which was, I met my husband in college. We were very young. I was almost 21. He was 22. And the first place we had kissed on our college campus was in this beautiful sculpture garden where they had Rodin sculptures, The Thinker and The Gates of Hell, and they have this beautiful sculpture garden. They have one in Philadelphia, and they have one in Paris, and they have one in California where we live, and in New York. They're kind of all over. He's very famous for The Thinker and things like that. So that's where our first kiss happened, in the Rodin sculpture garden. But when I started dating my husband, I learned very quickly that he and his family were very into the game of Scrabble. And I had never really played Scrabble more than social Scrabble, just putting down 3 and 4 letter words and kind of fun family Scrabble. But when I started dating my husband, my now husband, his family played competitive Scrabble. They knew every 2 letter word, every Q word without a U, every 3 letter word. They were very competitive Scrabble players. So I had to kind of get up to speed in my Scrabble game. So my husband, but my boyfriend at the time, we had a little travel Scrabble board, and he had taught me some of these 2-letter words and 3-letter words, and we started playing Scrabble together. So while we were living in Chicago at the time, and he was in law school, for his spring break, we went on this great, inexpensive flight ticket to Paris, of all places. And the first day there, we went to the Rodin Sculpture Garden, which is where, and I had studied art history, so I was, teaching him about all the things I'd learned in my art history class. And he said, "Well, let's play a quick game of Scrabble before dinner." And we had arrived on a red eye. We were pretty tired and whatever. And I said, "Okay, that sounds good." That was very normal for us. We played on the airplane. We played on the trains. We played at the beach. So we played on a park bench at the Rodin Garden in Paris. And halfway through the game, he put the word Mary down, M-A-R-R-Y, on the Scrabble board, but he opened up a triple word score, which is not a good place to put a 12-point word. And I said, "What did Mary, like, that's not worth anything." And I usually would lose because he was very good at Scrabble. So he said, "Well, why don't you read the board?" And during our game, he had been scattering "will" and "you" and "me" and other words, and Mary was the clincher. And he got down on his knee and he had a ring in his pocket, and he said it was the only time that he's ever seen me speechless. And I just You know where that comes from, Jed. I know. I mean, Jed, I had a podcast for a while too. Not as successful as yours, but you know, we like to talk. We talk, right? Mm-hmm. Talkers like to talk. So anyway, the point was he got on his knee, took the ring out of his pocket, you know, put the ring on my finger, and we called our parents from a phone booth. Most people listening, if they're our age, will know what that is. Most younger people won't. But the point was that was how our story began. And that story was kind of, I guess, the story that launched a thousand ships, because when I shared it, I started hearing everyone else's stories, and everyone started sending me their stories and sending me their videos of their stories. And it became this just ballooned experience. So the first book was Will You Marry Me? The World's Most Romantic Proposals. And the second book was 101 Ways to Pop the Question. So there were two proposal books followed by two wedding books, followed by a college essay book, which is what I was doing professionally, followed by a getting ready for college book, followed by some study skills books, and then a break for a while, and then followed by the parenting book, and now this book. So the books have sort of followed my life stages, sort of, and have been just a wonderful outlet for me to be able to be, you know, a full-time mom, but also be able to work from home and be able to, you know, use my brain in ways that I worked with students for many, many years, kind of guiding them through the college application process. So that's, I had before that worked in college admissions. So I felt like there was a lot to demystify in that process. And so I've loved working with teens my entire life. I was so excited to have teens of my own, which most people aren't excited about, because we're sort of conditioned not to. And I just think it's the greatest, most huge growth that you see in this life stage. And I love watching emerging adults become young adults. And now all my kids are taller than I am, except one of them. And, you know, they're still my children, but I'm talking to them as, you know, they're young adults making most of their own decisions now. So it's really been, the book writing's been a really fun journey. And I think has allowed me to also invest a lot in being a parent, which has been, you know, a much harder job than being a writer, as you know as well, Jen. Yeah.
Well, I love it. I absolutely love it. And we need to give you a task, and that is to write another book so you can come back on to celebrate.
I would love to. That would be great. I don't have any more in the pipeline right now, but something tells me they might spring forward. And I do appreciate that. And the work that you do is so wonderful and so important, and your energy and what you bring to your listeners is really a gift as well. So, congratulations on your successful career.
Thank you very, very much. Tell everybody, Cynthia, please, where they can go to find out more about C is for Construction and find out more about you.
Thank you so much. So C is for Construction can be found, as I mentioned, on Instagram at C is for Construction, just the whole title, all lowercase. And I would love to grow my audience there, but I do have a website. It's a little bit trickier. It's my entire name, Cynthia Muchnick, CynthiaMuchnick. .com. And that's where you'll find all of my books, all of my activities and events. Maybe Jed will meet in person when I come to Boston this fall. That would be super fun. And we can continue our dialogue together and swap, you know, book recommendations, which is always fun. And anyway, that's really the best way to kind of find me. I also have a handle called @ParentCompass, which is my handle for my parenting book. That is, you know, I go to speak at a lot of schools, to parent groups and to student groups on navigating through those years that can be difficult, but with the goal of having like positive, good mental health and keeping the parent-teen relationship intact, which is sometimes pretty hard to do. Yeah. So that's my other big passion, is kind of helping support parents of tweens and teens.
That's awesome. We've had a great time speaking to the author of C is for Construction. It's a great new board book from our friend, Cynthia Muchnick. Cynthia, thanks so much for being on Reading with Your Kids.
Thank you, Jed. It's been great chatting with you.
Before we invite our guest into the studio, I would love to invite you to visit a very special website. It's clownswithoutborders.org, clownswithoutborders.org. This is a group that I absolutely adore. I am part of Clowns Without Borders, and I had the honor of being part of the 2023 tour of El Salvador. I had so much fun joining with artists from all over the world to bring a smile to people who really needed it and really appreciated it too. And we would love for you to join us as a monthly joy maker. The Joymakers, they're a family of people just like you who love to laugh and make other people feel good. So please take a moment and visit clownswithoutborders.org and consider joining me as a Joymaker. Join us right now from the great state of Indiana. Our guest is here today to celebrate her new middle grade novel. It's called Max Mission Diary, Operation Save the Summer. Please welcome to the show, S.J. Engelman. Hey, Stephanie, how are you?
I'm great, Jed. Thanks so much for having me on tonight.
You are very welcome. Stephanie is returning to Reading With Your Kids. She is a member of Catholic Teen Books, and she participated in one of our progressive stories. Those are so much fun for me to start off with a prompt and then hear what you authors put together.
It's a really fun experience. It's so fun to see what, you know, what the authors before me have put together. And then, you know, I did my little segment and then where it leaps from there. It's a lot of fun as an author as well.
Yeah. And those stories are, they always have a really delightful little twist that I just never see coming.
Neither do I. So yeah, it's a lot of fun. Lots of unexpected things happen.
So let's talk about Max Mission Diary, Operation Save the Summer. What's this book all about?
Well, this is the story of young Mac. He's a boy who loves his video games. And at the beginning of the summer, his mom takes them away until he finishes all of his summer reading. And she buys him a journal and she wants him to do some summer writing as well. And Mac, you know, like most kids, feels that this is just going to absolutely ruin his summer. And so he sets off on a mission to get those video games back under his mother's nose. He's not going to do it, you know, by doing the reading and the writing that she wants him to do. He's going to sneak around and find other ways to accomplish his goal.
Mm-hmm.
And ends up discovering that life is a lot more fun when you're on the other side of a screen, when you're not, you know, sitting behind a television watching TV or playing video games, forms some new friendships and enjoys some new adventures.
And that is so true. And it is a message that, boy, kids and adults need that message more than ever.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Our kids are just glued to those doggone devices. And I've got kids ranging now from 10 to 21. And so, you know, I started off as a mom when these smartphones were brand new, when the video games were really just getting a whole lot smarter and a whole lot more engrossing. And I've made every mistake in the book. I've had my babies playing with my iPhone to keep them, you know, occupied, and gave my older kids phones way too early. And having learned from those experiences, Mac's mother is very much modeled after me. And, you know, I'm the mom that made the mistake of letting them have the video games and letting them just get used to having pretty much free reign on those video games. And so I wrote Max Mission Diary from a personal experience of taking my own kids' video games away, but also wanting to normalize this idea that this is okay. You know, it's okay for us parents to expect our kids to be off the video games, and for the kids in particular that read the book to see, gosh, I'm not the only kid that doesn't get to play video games all day. You know, so often that's the mantra we hear as parents is, oh, but mom, everybody else is playing video games, or everybody else has a smartphone. And, we need tools to battle that. So I hope that Max Mission Diary will be a tool in the parents' toolbox to help just fight this fight that we're fighting today.
And it is a fight. And I think that message is also something that's really important for the parent who's hopefully co-reading Max Mission Diary with their kids to hear. I recently celebrated my 50th high school reunion. And as I was sitting down, I went to a Jesuit high school here in Boston. And most of our graduates are very successful businessmen or lawyers or doctors, physicians, whatever. And my friend that I went with sat at the table, and he said, Isn't it amazing there's only one of the eight men here at the table, there's only one that's on their phone? And, you know, for that to be a revelation, it tells you that even old-timers like us are spending way too much time on the screen. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yes, we are. And I find myself all the time picking up my phone because it's dinged at me and I'm allowing someone else to control my attention and I don't even know who it is or what they want.
Right.
And I'm giving my attention to them. And, you know, I think it's important for us as adults and parents and grandparents to begin to really consciously start to try to set a better example.
Yeah. I remember when my son, he's 10 years older than your oldest, when we went in and he broke his phone or whatever, and we went in to replace it. And we gave our kids the dumb phones, I guess you call them, if they weren't new ones, smartphones. They had dumb phones. It was mainly for safety. Our kids went to school outside of our neighborhood, and my son was in high school that he had to take public transportation to. And so it was like, well, this is a way we can get in touch with you and whatnot. And he, the phone was either lost or damaged. And when we went to replace it, the salesman says, oh, this is really great. He can do this and this and this. And I goes, I don't want that. I don't, just give me the dumb phone. And they didn't have any. And it was infuriating.
You really have to search it out these days and know what you're looking for. And, you know, I switched us over to a new cell phone carrier recently, and I've got a 14-year-old who has, she's on a special, with a special company that only offers locked down phones, but don't have any of the extra, no internet access, no social media. And, this representative somehow learned that I had another, you know, another child. I'm sure I said something, and he just kept pushing, oh, but she can have a free phone. She can have a free phone. And it's only $25 a month. And I mean, I must have spent 10 minutes, 15 minutes convincing this guy that no, I don't want her to have a smartphone. I've tried locking those things down and keeping my kids off of the social media. It hasn't worked. And I'd rather just have this perfectly safe, locked down phone that the company has managed all that. Although my kids were talking about how to jailbreak it the other day. But you know, let's make it as hard. Let them learn something in the jailbreaking.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Now you are, as I mentioned, you're a member of Catholic Teen Books. Is there a faith-based message in Mac's mission diary?
You know, there's a very quiet faith message. The family is Catholic, and they really just kind of quietly live their faith. So there's a mention, I think, of prayer before meals. There's a mention of going to church on Sunday. Mom, when she's losing her patience with Mac, on the good days, she has a breathe, pray, like a breathe, pray response that, you know, he knows that she's going to respond reasonably and peacefully if she does this breathe and pray exercise. And then if she doesn't, if she forgets to pray, then he knows that she's probably going to blow her lid. And, he certainly does a few things in the book and, some fun incidents, many of which are taken from my own family experience where mom, you know, loses her cool a little bit, not too much, and, you know, has to go back and apologize to Mac. And Mac makes a lot of mistakes as well that he has to apologize to mom for. But just kind of that quietly living out their faith. So I wanted it to be a secular book. I wanted it to be open to a wide audience while still just offering that little bit of, you know, this is how we live. We live our faith in a small and, you know, in a quiet way in the book.
Well, you know, I think, to be honest with you, I think that's the most powerful way to, and I don't want anybody listening to this thinking that, oh, Stephanie's trying to sneak in some message. It's just, you know, when we see people, I remember the first time, I think we're down south with me and my daughter, and we always said grace at home before a meal, but we were out on the road. And we looked around, and there were folks saying a blessing in a restaurant. And it was just very quiet, just head down real quick. Thank you for this food. And my daughter and I looked at each other and was, oh, that's, you know what? That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, that's a great example. You know, probably, so Jesus is actually mentioned in the book, but it's in a very, comical way. One of Max, his first effort to get his video games back is that he's convinced mom cares so much about what he eats that if he just goes on a hunger strike, she will eventually cave because she'll be worried about him not eating for a few days. And, then his brother brings up, you know, Jesus starved himself, you know, Jesus didn't eat anything for 40 days. And, you know, they start doing a little bit of research. Well, okay, he's Jesus. How long has a real human actually gone without food? And so it ends up turning into this whole comical thing, but in a, you know, again, just kind of in a cultural way that even if a family is, you know, is Jewish or atheist or Hindu, any, I mean, Gandhi's in there too. That, you know, it's an opportunity for conversation. This is what this family believes. What do we believe? Who in our faith tradition has gone for extended periods of time and made sacrifices for extended periods of time? And how do we make sacrifices in our own lives? It's, you know, without being in your face at all, it invites that conversation.
Yeah. And I think that's really important. As I mentioned, I attended a Jesuit high school, and one of the neat things that kind of really surprised me when I started at that school is we were encouraged to have conversations not only about our own faith, but the other faiths around us. We were assigned to read the Quran, and it wasn't to say, oh, look how misguided that book is. It was like, let's talk about this. Let's talk about the ideas that we find in Buddhism and or whatnot. And I remember at my kids' Catholic school, a woman came up to me and she said, you must be so proud. Your children are so involved in church and the Eucharistic ministers. And I just love seeing that. Your kids are wonderful. And I'm really worried my daughter's going off to college. And, you know, in college, kids start to question their faith. And I said, that's a wonderful thing. It's a wonderful, wonderful thing. Because if your faith doesn't stand up to the questions, maybe you shouldn't have that faith.
Absolutely. And I think that's an important part of our parenting is that our kids have to be able to establish their beliefs on their own. Mm-hmm. They can't just grow up, you know, believing what mom and dad believe and then rest on those laurels for the rest of their lives. It's not going to work. That's not a firm foundation. They have to decide for themselves why they believe this. And we need to invite them and let them know that it's okay to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, what is it about writing for middle grade readers that you love so much?
You know, I think there is, I love the opportunity to just be creative and put thoughts on the page. With Max Mission Diary in particular, I really enjoyed being able to share some of my family's stories. You know, I've got five kids. So over the years, which Max family has five children as well. And so many people, they hear, you know, some of the crazy things that happen to us and, oh, Stephanie, you need to put this in a book. You need to put this in a book. You need to put this in a book. And I always thought, well, you know, maybe one of these days I will write a memoir. And then Max Mission Diary happened. And gosh, why would I write a memoir when I can just make fun of the fact that we've had lice, you know, four times in our household and just illustrate that. And, you know, also provide all these other families when you do have lice or when you're afraid of, you know, that's one of the worst things that can happen as a parent, as a kid. And now it's just one of those things that, well, Max's family went through it. They survived. But just the opportunity to share those stories. This in particular, my kids were really excited to see it and to see their own stories in there. And then to see their friends reading it, you know, I've got a 10-year-old, so I've been able to hear from so many of his friends about how they've enjoyed the story and what their favorite part is. And, oh gosh, I recognized Evan in this part and, you know, how they saw our family, but then how they saw their own family in it as well. That's been really rewarding.
That was one of the things I was going to ask you is how do your kids feel about you sharing their foibles with the world?
They censored a few things. So there were a few things that were in there that I had to take out or soften up a bit. Uh-huh. But in general, you know, it's pretty fun to have a book written about you. And the plan is that this is going to become a series. I'm working on the second book right now. And we are working as a family to brainstorm, because my memory is terrible. So, okay, guys, you know, what do you think the storyline should be? What crazy thing is Matt going to try to do this time? And what stories have we experienced as a family? Because, you know, real life is better than fiction. So let's take what's really happened, or maybe what we've heard happen to a friend, and I'll integrate that into this story. And, you know, that's going to be better than anything that I could just make up and write so often.
Now, are you worried at all that your 10-year-old or any of your other kids might take this as a challenge to go out and to kind of do some reality TV and create some mishaps that can enter into the book?
No, I hadn't even thought of that, Jed, but now you've planted the seed. I will say one thing that was really fun. My son, one of the things that Mac wants to do is earn enough money to just buy himself another video game. And again, underneath his mom's nose without her knowing about it. And, he and his neighborhood buddies end up having they start with a lemonade stand, and then they add books and they add cookies, and, you know, they just keep growing this thing until they actually make a decent amount of money. And, so my son is determined that he's got to earn some money. And so he got two of his neighborhood buddies together this weekend, and they had a little garage sale, and between the three of them, they made $60. So it was pretty fun. He took the initiative. This was all his idea. He started talking with his friends about it. They, you know, figured out who was bringing the tables and who was bringing the lemonade. And, you know, they want to do it now throughout the rest of the summer. And we're going to start working some business plans into it and, you know, really make this a true learning experience. And it was all inspired by him reading Mac's Mission Diary.
Excellent. Well, maybe next mission is starting a business, and we'll see him on Shark Tank.
There you go.
Yeah, there's some possibility there. Okay.
I need to spend more time with you, Jed.
Just give me a little credit. Thanks to Jed Lee. And
I sure will.
You mentioned that you had to censor some of the stories. Can you give us a kind of clue without revealing too much?
Well, yes, because he'll probably never hear. So Mac is actually modeled after my son, who is now 17. But it was, you know, I originally wrote this book 5 years ago. So he was 12 at the time, and he was kind of summarizing our family, and he was talking about himself and the one thing that makes him unique. He said he's very middle. He's the middle child. He's middle in height. He's, you know, middle at most sports, things like that. The one thing that sets him apart is that he was a preemie. And so he talked about kind of his early life in the hospital and having to be fed through a tube and stuff like that. And that my son was like, yeah, no, mom, I don't want people reading about that. I don't want that to be, you know, like common knowledge that people are talking about at school. So it's mentioned in the book, but just not quite to the degree that I had originally foolishly written in, thinking that it was cute.
I can relate to him. I certainly don't remember being a preemie. I think it was before that was born. I was very sick when I was very young and spent my first 3 months in the hospital. And I didn't know about that until the doctor let it slip one day. And as you know, he was there. I think I was 16. I was playing sports, and he turned to my mom and he said, "Can you believe this big strong guy? He was once that little kid with the tube in his head." And I'm like, "Wait a minute, what are you guys talking about?"
Wow. That had to come as a shock.
It came as a very big shock.
But yeah, we've got the pictures that my son has seen. So he's very well aware of his past, but he wanted it to be limited in the book. I understand that.
I appreciate that. And little guys, they don't want to be reading about that stuff anyways.
Right. But there's a cute little illustration of this baby having steaks and I forget what, like a steak and a hamburger and things fed, you know, down a tube. And so I was like, Isaac, as long as I can find enough to just keep, I'm sorry, I just said his name. I shouldn't have done that. As long as I can have enough of the story to keep this illustration, I really like this illustration. So we came to a happy medium.
Excellent. Well,
I love that. I think families will love that. As I said, I really, you know, obviously middle grade kids are going to love this book, but I really encourage families to continue reading with your kids as they become middle, as they become independent readers. If you're not reading curled up on the couch together, you know, have co-read, have those conversations on the way to soccer practice, on the way to school, around the dinner table. It's just a super way to grow closer.
Mm-hmm. And it starts so many conversations. Whatever book you're reading, just enables conversations that we need to be having with our children. Yeah. So it's one of the most important things we can do as parents is read with our kids.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure it has happened to you. Your kids are 13 or 14 and they say, yeah, mom, you never knew, but back when we were eight, we did this. And you're saying,
oh, yes.
What you did?
Oh, yes. Way too many times. And I'm sure that there's much more still to be revealed.
Yes. And that's the beauty of reading with your kids, because you find out all that stuff you didn't, that they stuck by you when they were younger.
Right, right. Some incident happens in the book and they will finally fess up about this thing that they did.
Well, we can't let you sneak away until you tell us where we can learn more about Mac's mission diary, Operation Save the Summer, and find out more about you.
Absolutely. Well, my website is stephanieengelman.com. Kind of a difficult spelling, but Engelman is E-N-G-E-L-M-A-N. And it's Mac's Mission Diary is on Amazon. I'm also on Substack, so you can find me there. And that's really the place that I'm writing and updating most frequently is on Substack.
We've had
under
a great
Stephanie Engelman.
We've had a great time speaking to the author of Mac's Mission Diary, Operation Save the Summer. Great new middle grade novel from our guest, S.J. Engelman. Hey, S.J., thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Jed. Take care.
Thanks for joining us on Reading with Your Kids. Hey, if you're an author with a fantastic children's book, we'd love to hear from you. Please visit readingwithyourkids.com. And click on the author's click here button up at the top of the page to find out how you can be a guest. Being a guest, it's fun, it's easy, and it gives you the chance to tell thousands of people about your fantastic children's book. You can also find out about our certified great read program and find out about our very affordable, incredibly effective promotional services. We want to thank the folks who made today's show so wonderful, starting with our guest, Cynthia Muchnick. Please be sure to check out C is for Construction. Also want to thank S.J. Engelman. Please be sure to check out Mac's Mission Diary, Operation Save the Summer. I want to thank my incredible team, Fatima Khan, Chris Daugherty, El Glassman, Dante Greco. I want to thank my beautiful wife for all the support she gives me. Most of all, we all want to thank you. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us today. And as always, thank you so very much for taking the time to make the world a better place. And you do that every time you read with your kids. I'll be looking for you in the next episode of Reading with Your Kids.